everybody, and welcome to this episode of Turkish TV Time. Today we're talking about Ethos, or Bir Başkadır, episode 6, which is luckily a little more lighthearted than the previous episode where Ezgi and I were depressed for the whole day. Also, in more optimistic news, we've got Sophia with us. She didn't fall asleep this time. So the whole gang is here, and we're very, very happy about it.
Yay.
Yay. Is anybody drinking tea? Nope. Okay, great. I wouldn't want you to, even if you were.
You would edit it out.
I would. I would just edit in some silence. Okay, so now I'm going to take us through what happened in this episode. I watched this like 5-6 days ago, so feel free to interrupt, and hopefully my notes are good enough. So, oh God, okay, yeah, I remember this. So Meryem wakes up Yasin by saying that Ruhiye is gone. And apparently she took the little boy with her. So that's horrifying because I would think that they would both think that she's gone and killed herself and maybe killed her kid too. So that's really scary. Then weirdly, Meryem goes to see Peri and tells Peri about it instead of going to look for her. And she admits that she's like doing nothing to find her, which is pretty odd. And that she's also lying to her brother about her appointments with Peri, which is completely understandable because Yasin yells at her about everything. And then basically Peri like tries to give her an olive branch. The appointment kind of goes nowhere. Meryem says like, it's really nice talking to you. And Peri says, oh, well, this is my job. And then Meryem kind of gets weird about it. So like, I think she kind of was just thinking that they were friends, but kind of forgot that it was her job. I don't know. And then Peri follows her out, immediately mistakes another lady with a headscarf for Meryem, which is really not helping her case. And then finds Meryem on a bench. And she kind of, as I said, offers an olive branch and says, like, I would love to try your baking in the future. Vegetarian, if you can, which is so petty. But I think that was sweet. She tried.
I have a completely different read on that, but okay. We can get into it later. I thought none of it was sweet.
Okay.
I mean, I thought that she was trying, but well, I still think that she offended Meryem like way too much to ever make up.
And I was like totally like feeling the same offense that Meryem was feeling actually the whole time. So I think there's some maybe a cultural thing that's not translating
okay, interesting. So we'll definitely talk about that. And then Peri fucks it all up by calling her Hazal, who we don't know who that is, but I'm gonna assume it's another woman with a headscarf because she just can't keep him straight. Then we go to Gudbin's office where Peri is sobbing and she's really upset that she called Meryem Hazal, and she's also sick of her office, sick of her life. She goes on a whole rant, really messes up her eyeliner. She's like, fuck this profession, fuck gluten. It's pretty funny. And Gubin has become the villain of this entire TV show for me, just in this one episode. So she basically breaks up with her. She's like, I don't want you as a patient anymore, after this lady has been crying her heart out to her. And then she's like, oh, but let's do brunch on Sunday, girl. Which is just so horrible. It's unbelievable. And she's also like, oh, we should finish our session, which is, I mean, God, I just hate her so much. I already had bad feelings about her, but wow, this episode, she really is making a play for Fatma's hit list. Peri leaves with her dignity intact, kind of, which I would have absolutely screamed at her. So that was good for her. Then we go back to Meryem and Yasin and the house where nothing fun ever happens. And they have a shouting conversation like they always do. The police were there. And Maryam thinks that this has something to do with the rock that was thrown through the window, which we will come back to later. Then they're at, or I guess Hoja comes to see them. And Harunisa, we learn we were right when we speculated like two episodes ago that she was studying in Konya. So she was living there, I guess, with her girlfriend. And
you also, like, I don't know if it's going to be relevant in the next episode, but I think Hilmi was the one that like told the Hoja that something had happened, because like he probably just wants an excuse to go see Maryam.
Hilmi is the talkie guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, and it's at this point that I learned that the child was also missing. I think they just neglected to mention that in the subtitles, but maybe I just missed it. So then we go to Ruhie. She's at her village, which we all knew that she was, except for the family that she has. And there's an extremely creepy man who's watching her, like outside a cafe. She goes to see Semiha, who is her friend, question mark, because she doesn't really give her a friendly greeting. And they have a really weird conversation, but finally she invites her in and asks why she's there. And Ruhia says, I came because after I heard that he died, we don't know who yet, she like couldn't stop thinking about this. And so she needed to come and deal with it or see his grave or something. And then we kind of get the explanation, a bit of an explanation about what happened to her. So we see that Ruhia says, like, I told Yasin that I wasn't a virgin when we met. And I told him about what happened at the olive tree, which we have seen the olive tree in a flashback before. And then she heard that her rapist was dead. But then a week later, she got depressed and she's been depressed ever since. And when they went on their road trip, this is like really, really messed up. She thought that Yasin was going to just like leave her at the village and abandon her there and go back to his life, which is why she freaked out.
And she also thinks that he's dating someone else.
She does?
Yeah. Doesn't she? She says, like, I know that he's seeing someone else, and that's why he was just going to ditch her. That's what I thought I understood.
I missed that, but that's possible.
Yeah, like, I didn't get that either.
I think she overheard one of the conversations where Maryam was like, what's the deal between you and the Hoja's daughter, or something like that.
Maryam has been kind of weird about Yasin and that whole time, so that makes sense.
But I do think that Yasin is interested in Hairunisa, like, in some respect. Like, he's curious about her.
He's definitely more interested than he should be.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like a nosy interest, too. He's like, it's not your business to get to the bottom of whatever you're trying to get to the bottom of, sir.
Yeah, well, he's just completely obsessed with the Hoja, so.
Yeah, oh my god. Yeah, I'm gonna agree with all negative opinions of Yasin for once, because I was so annoyed at his worshipful comments. I'm so stupid.
He's so stupid. Okay, so then Ruhie has, like, the world's longest monologue, which is very surprising for someone who said two words this entire series. And she asks Semiha to go with her to the grave, except, oh shit, her rapist is still alive. He's not dead. So that's bad news. And I'm guessing that's the creepy guy who was watching her in town. Okay, then we've got Hoja's protege, whose name is Hilmi.
Yeah.
Is he his son, or is he just like...
No, he just has like a prayer group / discussion group for men.
Like, okay. Monologue group for him, really. Yeah. Like, captive audience.
He found people that have to listen to him. Okay. Yeah, so he just talks at Maryam for a really long time. And she finally gives him the message that she's not interested and he needs to walk out. And he does. But it's really long and awkward.
I don't know if he gets the message, but at least he leaves the house.
He leaves. He shuts up and leaves. So something worked. Then we are with Selim, which is the first time we've seen him for like two episodes. And here we go. I felt bad for Selim. We'll talk about it, but yikes, that was horrible.
Wait, so, is it Selim or Sinan?
Wait, is it Sinan?
Sinan. It's Sinan, yeah.
I always do that. Sorry, Sinan. Okay, so he's at the gym. Oh, no. He wakes up on the couch and his house is filthy. And he realizes that Maryam has not come on the day when she normally comes. And it's because Yasin has basically forbade her from going to work. So that's fucked up. And he's yelling at her in the kitchen. So, oh, and then he goes on his rant about how amazing the Hoja is, which is just like so weird. And dude needs a better like father figure in his life, male mentor. I don't know, but this is not it. Then we have Sinan at the gym. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Then we have Sinan at the gym. He's leaving and he is like sitting on a bench, which is a weird move. Just leave the gym. Why are you sitting on the bench? But he hears three girls gossiping about him. Gubin is one of them. And she says such mean stuff about him. It's really, really, really bad. And, yeah, I just, wow, Gubin, what an episode for her. Then we've got Yasin. He's on the tram and Psycho Girl is there. And he follows her to Hairunisa's house, I guess. That was what I got from that. I don't know how he knew who she was and that she was the person who threw the brick. But he...
I don't know that he knew about the made the brick connection yet necessarily, but I got the impression that he like just noticed her and like remembered from the prior encounter in the club, like she, and then was just like, why is she probably thinking like why is she going in this direction?
Okay.
But yeah, we don't see much other than like their final encounter. So
right. So he accuses her of taking Ruhie, and basically outside the Hoja's house, they have a crazy physical fight where Psycho Girl kicks his ass, which is awesome. Love that. And Hairunisa continues to be a useless excuse for a human and does nothing. Absolutely nothing, just stands there looking upset. And that is the end of the episode. So now we're going to move on into the gossip / banter / spilling no one's tea section.
I have a question here, and it's why did she only take the boy?
Ruhie. Yeah.
Because he's haunted like she is. He's like,
is he though?
Yeah, he doesn't talk. He's like never spoken.
Oh.
Like in his life. Yeah.
He's traumatized as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was because he was a boy.
No, I think haunted Victorian mother takes haunted Victorian child.
Because I feel like, because how it happens is that the little girl lets Benyam know, right?
Yeah.
Daughter. So I think, like, that's very telling of, like, the little girl's probably wished her mom had taken her or something.
Probably, yeah. Poor one out for the little girl. Like, no one talks to her.
Yeah.
Including her little brother.
No one tells the kids what's going on and they just yell at them for everything.
Yeah.
And that car trip was definitely really traumatizing for them.
Oh my God. It was traumatizing for us as viewers aware that it was fictional. Yeah.
And like poor kids. And I feel like Maryam does her best to like try to like hide the crazy shit that's going on. But like
up to a certain point, yeah.
But we don't really see Maryam like having nice moments with the kids. Like,
she has to do everything for the house. Yeah. Probably the extent of what she does is like bathe them or like, you know, like tasks versus
and
like.
She picks up the girl at school, remember?
Yeah.
But we don't see her having like fun with them or talking.
Yeah.
With them or...
yeah.
I don't think anyone has fun in that family though.
No. You're right. This is
because like misery. It's just whatever this guy's name that just slipped my mind. Is it Yasin? Just yeah. Yelling at everyone. And then
other than Hoja. Love Hoja.
I really feel bad for the kids. I feel like they're gonna have a really troubled adult life.
Yeah. Like a cycle of poverty and trauma. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not gonna let up.
So you think that woman was like was she like a childhood friend or something? Because it seems to me like Rohia grew up in that village, and then
yeah,
when her parents died, Yasin made her sell everything, including her beloved olive tree. But it's weird that she would feel weird about him selling the olive tree when like she apparently was assaulted in the olive, like in the olive tree region area soil. Also, it seems to me like you could probably make more, I mean, this is a stupid conjecture, but like you could make more money from like having an olive tree farm than, you know, working as a bouncer in Istanbul.
For sure. But I think, you know, urban migration is a thing.
Yeah. Because people think they'll be able to claw their way out of their situation, but it's not how the system's set up.
Yeah, and I mean, they're surviving on like one income as a bouncer, which doesn't seem really promising. But what, so like in theory, Ruhie has been this depressed since she got married, basically. Or before.
No, she's been depressed since she heard
the guy died. Yeah.
Wait, did you just say dad?
Since the guy died.
Okay. Just wanted to check I wasn't missing something.
No. So I don't think it was immediately after they got married. I think it was, I don't know how long ago, but it's definitely been a while because like everyone's been navigating this for some time. You can tell by how fatigued they all are, but.
Mm. Do you think Yasin is sucking up to the Hoja to like eventually like ask him to marry his daughter or something?
No, I think he's just absolutely desperate for some sort of like paternal father
figure validation. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That was my
marry his daughter as in like officiate a wedding or what? Or like
marry Hydronisa. Like I think he likes Hydronisa. Her.
Okay. No. I've never felt like he liked her. I've always felt like it was like he couldn't quite put his finger on what was going on there. Like he was always like she seems familiar from something, but nothing was computing. And now finally, like as we saw, it computed finally when he saw them next to each other.
God. Yeah, he seems like pretty not attentive to anything, including his children or his wife.
Yeah.
Or his sister, obviously.
Yeah, it's but like you take your average like man and then you load all this baggage onto him. That's what you get.
Yeah.
It's like not cope.
Do you think that she doesn't like Hilmi because she partly doesn't want to leave the home or just she just finds him really fucking annoying?
She finds him annoying. Is. She's like way smarter than he is and thinks he's the shit, but she's like, you're dumb. And
he's a mansplainer for sure.
Yeah. Because he doesn't even like say the right year. He's like 2018.
She's oh
like
god, that was so bad.
That was so bad.
That left me thinking, like, what is like, why would you say the wrong year? Like, what time of year is it? Isn't it like December already with like cold weather? Or like
maybe it's January. Maybe it's
true.
That's it's not like these people are celebrating big New Year's, you know, parties. Probably the days just come and go.
No parties.
No happiness parties
for these people.
Also, like New Year's party. I mean, New Year's parties are very big in Turkey in general, but I could definitely see the Hoja being like, this is an imitation of Christmas, which is like not a Muslim holiday. And it's like what heretics would celebrate. So you can't. So I could definitely him like dissuading people from marking the New Year, leading to this poor man's confusion. If he had a party, he would remember.
True indeed.
Okay, let's talk about the Peri Meryem thing because clearly you guys got something from that I did not.
Yeah, so
I think I'm in the middle.
Basically, the way she, like, Mayim was like, you know, it feels really good to, like, talk through these things with you, and I don't talk about this stuff with anybody, but here I can, you know, we can, like, I can get some things off my chest, and it's really good, blah, blah, blah. Thank you so much. And then Pity's like, oh no, don't mention it. It's my duty. Like, the word she uses is, like, duty, as if it's, like, a burden that she must, like, carry out, versus, like, even if she said it's my job in English, that for me has, like, a different connotation than the way she said it. She said vazife, which is, like, what a soldier has. A soldier has a vazife. Like, it's like, it's like, it's not like, oh, I'm doing this because necessarily I love it. It's like, I just have to. So the way she said it immediately, and you could tell from Mayim's face, like, she feels like, oh, I'm burdening you with this duty. Like, this isn't an equal exchange. And I'm like, of course it isn't an equal exchange, because Peyton never says anything, which is what, like, she's what Mayim comes to realize and says as well. And then she gets uncomfortable and leaves. And then the Burek thing was really awkward, because she was like, if you feel like ever making some for me again, I'd love to try a little bit, but only if it's, like, not beef. Like, cheese would be great. Like, fuck off. You don't tell people to bring you things. People bring you things if
they
want to.
That was very awkward, but, like, she had a good intention behind it.
Yeah, she thought she was doing a good thing, but it was just very, everything was very patronizing, so.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And she's so awkward. She doesn't know how to interact with people, basically.
Well, and then calling her Hazal was just, like, the
cherry. Oh, yeah, that was, yeah, truly.
Do you think we're going to find out who Hazal is?
Yeah, she cried about too much at the equally disastrous set appointment of her own.
Yes, okay, so that's where we are. Let's move on to Perry and Gubin's appointment. This show, like most of the shows that we watched, really does therapy quite dirty.
Yeah.
No, agreed. And it's honestly, I think the biggest offense on Gudbin's part is that it's so obvious that she dislikes Petty and, like, is judging her for everything that she's sharing.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel really uncomfortable.
I just can't believe they ever, like, agreed to this arrangement. Like, it's so against every kind of code of ethics, I feel like. Like, I feel, I don't know, maybe it happens in the US too, where, like, you're friend that you know from before is your therapist, but it just seems so wrong, and clearly even if it took 2 years it led to big problems.
Yeah, but maybe it was like Gulbin's way of, like, not being friends with her and, like, having a role where she couldn't get closer to her because maybe, she's her therapist.
Yeah,
maybe. That's so fucked up.
Yeah, really fucked up. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, that's like her not being able to say, like, I don't like you, don't talk to me. Bye.
And then, like, the fake, like, trying to make amends by being like, let's get brunch over the weekend. It's like, you don't actually want to see her.
Oh my god, that was so mean. And, like, oh, let's finish our session after oh my god.
Yeah, it was terrible. She really was like, did any of you go to school for anything, please?
Yeah. Also, like, Petty walks in crying and, like, devastated, and this woman, like, can't even, like, listen to her for 5 minutes before she's like,
anyway,
this isn't working out. Sorry.
She doesn't have an ounce of empathy for her.
No.
It's crazy.
No. Which I guess is, like, I mean, if I'm stepping back and looking at this as, like, you know, a cohesive script and, like, character development and arcs and stuff, it makes sense. Like, her detachment and her meanness makes sense. But yeah, it was still awful to watch. But I mean, it's been building since the first episode, where Peta has been just like incredibly venomous about people wearing headscarves, or, like, anyone she deems to be, like, not of her whatever demographic, social class, etc.
Was this the episode with Petty's parents, or was that the last one?
But they're a joy too.
God,
we haven't seen the full extent quite yet, other than the mom being like, why are these people with headscarves on TV? But she gets it from somewhere,
as we already knew.
Yeah. And then if we go to the other horrible cringe moment featuring Gudbin, the gym.
Oh my
god. Oof. Yeah, I feel you. I felt bad for Sidan. I never thought I'd get there in my life, but no. Here we are.
That was bad. He lacks a lot of self-awareness, I think. True. He thinks he's just like a player and he's like the shit, and sex with him is like sex with God, basically. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Yeah. He needs to be like brought into reality, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Not gonna argue with that. I mean, probably out of all those, I'm sure that he's okay in bed was the worst for him, like out of all those comments.
And what I love is like they're really like male pride oriented comments. Like, yes. It's kind of what a man in his head is thinking, like, okay, if a woman said this about me, it would make me really insecure, and then that's exactly what Gudbin is saying. It's like a male visual, like of what a group of women's conversation would be about.
Yeah,
which I find a little bit like stereotype reinforcing, but I don't understand what they were trying to do with that scene though entirely. Yeah.
Drive a wedge between those two characters. Not that Gudbin would really dumped care him, right? Yeah, might motivate. I mean, Sinan did have the weird fantasy that Mariam was like in the living room with him when he was like half awake.
Was odd.
I don't know if it would like motivate him, because he's already kind of weirdly like smelling her headscarf and stuff. Like, I don't know if it would like, I honestly don't remember, but it could motivate him to do something inappropriate.
Oh my God. I just hope that Mariam makes good decisions, because
yeah,
she should not be with that guy.
Yeah. She's like his biggest fan. It's really tragic.
Okay. Ruhie at the village. Thoughts? Reactions? Who knew that she could speak so many words in a row?
And resourceful, she got there. Like, that's not, doesn't look like, I think it's the license plate says 17, which is Çanakkale, which is it's not that far, but like, we went to Çanakkale. Remember how long that took?
Yeah, it was a long
time. Oh my God. We were stuck in the craziest traffic jam.
Yeah. Those
going there and leaving as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think now there's like very, very quick ways to get there with like the bajillion humongous unnecessary bridges that have been built. But I don't think that little van she was in took the express route. So it probably didn't take her a while.
But like, why didn't she do this beforehand? Why didn't she get off the car when the guy was threatening to leave and like go somewhere that she wanted to go to?
I mean, she's not capable of making rational decisions in her state.
True.
Yeah, looking forward to whatever misadventures they get into there.
Oh my God. Like, I am sorry that it happened to her, but it doesn't make her a compelling character to me. Like, I just don't. I have no interest in her. Like,
that's harsh. Really? Come on. Yeah.
I mean, what has she given us, like, that we should root for her? Like, I don't.
She's like the worst husband on earth.
Yeah, she's like paralyzingly ill. Yeah. She's like so ill. But she's trying to find recovery and peace. I think that's very compelling.
Honestly, I wonder why Mariam doesn't like push her to go to the psychiatrist or like take her to Pity or something.
That she would, like, if she could sneak her out, she totally would. Like, that's within her, the scope of her character. But yeah, that is true. I'm a little surprised too now that you mention it.
That's like a plot
hole. I don't feel
like
Mariam actually cares about Ruhie all that much.
I think she's annoyed by her because she has to pick up all the slack.
And I think like she and her brothers, even though she enjoys therapy, I think she still sees it like the way she was saying it to Peta. Like, she sees it as a convo, not like a treatment,
right?
So she probably again like sees herself and what she's doing in a totally separate category from the sort of healthcare that Ruhie needs.
When she was probably doing like rationalizing it as like, she's my friend, she's not my caretaker or like my doctor.
Yeah. Also, Peta seems like very ill-equipped to handle like severe depression. So.
Yeah, Mariam probably knows that Peta is useless as a therapist. So
Peta is a mess.
But she can at least prescribe medication.
Yeah, or at least like refer her to like. I mean, Ruhie probably needs to be hospitalized. Like, this is not just like a come once a week kind of thing. But don't take medical advice from this podcast. But that's just my impression is that it's more severe than what Mariam needs.
Anything on the ending with Yasin getting beat up or
LOL.
No, I
and,
like
and stabbed. She had a knife.
She stabbed him?
What?
Yeah, she had a knife when she was running and she threw it.
Oh my god.
Wow. Okay, also does she not live, like she doesn't live in the neighborhood or anything? Because then there was a preview, there was a scene in the previous episode where she's even wearing like the hijab and everything to like to like camouflage with her other friends.
I don't think, I think she probably like lives in another, either part of Istanbul or another city altogether. They just know each other from going to school in Konya. So I think she's probably just been like squatting various places. She seems resourceful. She's probably finding shelter for herself.
Makes sense.
Okay, so now we're going to move on into the history section where we're going to talk about the 100th anniversary of the founding of the Turkish Republic, which happened pretty recently. And we're also going to throw in a little mansplaining just for fun.
Mansplaining is the root of all toxic man behavior, or a very high ranking symptom. So the 20th October, which in a lot of countries I think this is the case, but in Turkey's one of them, like these important days we just like call them by the date, 29 Ekim or Cumhuriyet Bayramı, Republic Day. So on the 29th of October 1923, Atatürk, before the Grand National Assembly declared, well actually he did so on the 28th, and he said tomorrow, which would have been the 29th, we will, you know, we will have a republic. Like, I declare that we'll have a republic from tomorrow. So, and then like everyone obviously supported the notion of sending up a republic, a form of government in the form of a republic. And Atatürk was then elected the first president of the Republic of Turkey, which is a role he held until his unfortunately very early death in 1938. So he had almost 15 years a little over 15 years in power. This particular year, so obviously the 100th anniversary of any country's founding should be a big to-do. You know, the government should be the first, you know, the people and the government especially should be like leading the way with organizing celebrations and making a big fuss out of this internationally, etc. This whole year has been extremely quiet from a celebrating the 100th anniversary of the country's standpoint from surprise. The government. Yeah. And this, I mean, just to be blunt, comes from the fact that this government does not like Atatürk. They don't like secularism. And their one news commentator, who's like obviously opposition aligned in Turkey, said it very well recently. I think it was actually this opposition channel's broadcast on the 29th of October. He said in the clearest terms, he said Erdogan is jealous of Atatürk. Like he's just jealous that this man who died in 1938 commands more respect, like universally. Even people who voted for Erdogan love Atatürk. Like not 100% of the people who voted for Erdogan. There's certainly a fringe element that is, and like they think there should be a caliphate and like it's very extreme, but there's I want to give that demographic still credit and say they are still they still respect that Atatürk, you know, all the things that he accomplished in his lifetime, but Erdogan is not one of those people who has that respect. So he and the government really downplayed the 100th anniversary, which is just crazy bananas. Like it's 100 years, you should be really like telling everyone in the world and having big parties and stuff. There were on a different news broadcast leading up to it, one of the talking heads on the show, another journalist, mentioned that the Polish embassy in Ankara and I think it was Japan, it was an East Asian country, I can't remember, I think it was Japan and it was Poland, called the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and said, hey, your 100th anniversary is coming up and we'd like to host something as well, you know, since we're here and since we're all friends. Are you gonna do something? Like, we don't want to like schedule something over like what you're doing, but we'd like to commemorate at our embassies too. And so it was just, you know, again, bananas that governments that are unrelated, you know, allies of course, but you know, unrelated governments are like, hey, are you going to celebrate your own 100th birthday, or should we, like, what's going on? So just incredibly awkward, embarrassing, on the international stage, at least embarrassing. Anyway, thankfully the 29th of October 2023 rolled around. The citizenry of Turkey was incredibly active and proud that whole day. Everyone was, even the local governments, especially the CHP, People's Republican Party, which is the party that Atatürk himself founded, and that's still, you know, the leading kind of opposition party. The governments, the municipalities they control, like Istanbul, Ankara, Izmir, various others, they did really, really huge municipality sponsored celebrations. And the Atatürk's mausoleum in Ankara did, I mean, they had, I have to imagine, record numbers of visitors. It was well over a million people went and paid their respects. So it was really heartening to see people showing up and people still celebrating in their own way, but really just really devastating that the government was not kind of leading that effort, when, you know, it's like none of them would be in their positions they're in without what happened 100 years ago. And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say quite a few of the people who are alive in Turkey today probably wouldn't have been had, you know, 100 years ago all that stuff not happened, because the what is now the territory of Turkey was like completely cut up, and you know, there was warfare on many fronts and a lot of people were killing a lot of people. So I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that had a, you know, peace not been achieved and government set up, it would have been a lot different looking today than it is now. So anyway, a weird, super weird year overall, you know, with the earthquake, and then that's for 100th year, you know, have like the worst natural disaster ever that has befell the country, followed by a really demoralizing election cycle, followed by this like government pretending nothing's happening on the 100th anniversary, disheartenment. But anyway, we press on. Hopefully next 100 years is better, but the first 100 years has been kind of rough. We'll see. But there was an event here in North Carolina to mark, it was an Atatürk commemoration event, because he passed away on the 10th of November, 1938. So 10th of November is very close to the 29th of October. So you kind of get every year these back-to-back gatherings, and, you know, everywhere in general commemorations. So on the 10th of November here in North Carolina, that commemoration event, one of the former U.S. ambassadors to Turkey was a speaker. And he made a really interesting point in saying, like, he didn't outright say that, especially these days, like, things could be better, like, in Turkey. He didn't say that outright, but he implied it by saying, you know, if let's just think about the U.S.'s centennial, 1876, Civil War just happened, like, you know, the KKK was on the rise, Reconstruction was going really badly. You know, there was massacres of Native Americans that kind of reached their peak. So he kind of listed all these things off, and he was like, you know, there's every country has, like, you know, these difficult periods and, you know, need to just work to be better. So I thought that was a really nice message, and a good reminder that, you know, shit can be bad, but hopefully it gets better with good leadership and time. So anyway, it was, yeah, weird 29th of October. It was a happy day, but bittersweet because of the vibes were just off the whole year, but put eloquently, the vibes. But yeah, so anyway, important milestone, and hopefully things start to improve, because they're not great right now. But yeah, that's my take/rant on the situation.
It is a good one.
Makes sense. Yeah, and it's sad, but I think the truth is that Turkey is still like a relatively new country in comparison to a lot of other countries in the world.
Yeah.
Even though like there's been a lot of history for a longer time than, for example, here. But
yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, I think Turks included, like, we get in the headspace of like, oh, it's, you know, we've been, Turkey has been here for hundreds of years, but no, that was the completely different government, and that was reduced to rubble, and then, you know, this government came out of that, the rubble. So it's still kind of miraculous when you think about all that had to happen for it to come about, and it should definitely be appreciated. But yeah, I think there's just that the momentum of those years, especially when Atatürk was alive, and like the bang, 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 all the reforms. Like, he literally changed the alphabet, like we've talked about on this podcast. Like, he changed the education system. He gave women the, you know, political agency, all this stuff in a really short amount of time. And so I think people are still, even people who never obviously were alive when he was alive, are like, that's your frame of reference, which is not going to come around often or ever in most scenarios. So, but yeah, I just hope that people, again, they just seeing how seriously people took the day, like the average citizens, and how much people talked about wanting to have a true republic and democracy and all of that. I'm like, please just be civically engaged, like, after this too, and make it happen, because it's not just, you know, about performative, like, oh, we love this. It's like, you have to actually show up. So I hope that, you know, future elections, there's a big, big round of municipal elections coming up, unfortunately, for everyone in April. So I hope, or in March. So I hope that that civic engagement is demonstrated. It's my English language push for people to vote in Turkey. How do we want to talk about mansplaining? I feel like there's an infinite history of that.
Well, I can talk about the origin, because,
oh yeah,
I pulled up the essay on my phone.
Oh yeah, it came from an essay a few years ago, right? It's not that old of a word.
Mm-hmm. So the word actually was not used in this essay, but it kind of came to describe this author's experience. So people put it as the origination. So there's an essay by this author named Rebecca Solnit from 2008. And basically she has this crazy story, and it's really well written. I recommend that you Google it. But she went to a party, and she is an author and has published a bunch of books. And one of her books that had just come out was about Edward Muybridge. I don't know who that is.
Mm-hmm. He's a photographer. And he also, I don't want to get this wrong. Oh yeah, I think he murdered his wife after she was cheating, or I can't remember if he murdered his wife or the wife's lover, but he committed a murder, and there's an opera about it anyway.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah. Sounds like an interesting book. And she was chatting with some guy at the dinner party who said, oh, well, a very important book was just published about this subject. And she said, oh, I hadn't heard about that. And he proceeds for an hour to tell her all about this book that he hadn't actually read. He'd just read the New York Review of Books about it. And it turned out it was her book, actually. And her friend had to interrupt like four times to try and tell the guy that it was this woman's book that he was describing back to her. Anyway, it's a really entertaining essay, and it is a perfect example of mansplaining, something that we, I'm sure, have all been subject to many, many times. And it's just a really eloquent term to describe like that set of circumstances. So it's really a great word. I like it a lot.
There's a meme I really like, and I don't want to butcher it, but I just want to quote it. Oh, okay. Yes, here it is. Well, actually, it's only mansplaining if it comes from the mansplain region of France. Otherwise, it's just sparkling misogyny. Like, perfect. This is an example of mansplaining and a joke all in one.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, so our friend Hilmi seems like a really big mansplainer, although he really should stick to not citing dates when he mansplains things, because it's a problem, okay, for him.
Yes.
And the funny thing is, like, he's so desperate to be liked by her, but then he's, like, doing everything in his power to not be liked.
Yeah.
Do you think he walks away? I feel like his body language when he walked away was, like, God dang, like, I didn't, like, I messed
that up.
Yeah,
I think he was like, oh no, yeah. I messed it up.
Yeah, okay. He has, like, that much of self-awareness. It's not that much in general, but he has just enough to know that he, like, he at least he doesn't think he killed it.
yeah, for sure. I do still think that he's a better option than what Mariam's got going on in her life right now. Anything to get out of that house.
Yeah.
I think that's the whole thing, like, they're all trapped in this cycle, and I think even she's trapped, and there's no real way for her to get out unless it's to a worse situation or to, like, a similarly bad situation, like with Hami. So she's like, nope.
I do kind of, the only thing I will say for Hami, like, the small bit of sympathy I have for him is, you know, even though he, like, doesn't know what year it is and talks nonsense half the time, I do think that he, like, he is trying to, like, learn things. Like, he's trying to, like, read and, like, expand his horizons, mm-hmm. even though, like, he's probably, I mean, he probably doesn't need to hold court about it at the coffee shop every day. But, like, you know, he's, like, trying to, like I said, expand his horizons. So, and I think he's in an environment where, like, not a lot of people are trying to do that. So it must be, like, very one-sided and annoying for him. But he also doesn't need to be broadcasting one way all the time. But I guess because he's never had, like, probably a healthy dialogue about something intellectual, and possibly, I mean, who knows how much school he's actually attended. I don't think he knows how to, like, socialize properly, but and society has no issues with mansplaining, obviously, so it just kind of happens. He just allows it to happen at people.
Yeah, I do think you make a good point, though, because I think a lot of what we've seen from Hoja is, like, let's stick with the knowledge that we have, and that's going to make us just stick with that, and we'll be fine. Whereas at least Hami is trying to, like, incorporate new ideas and learn about the world.
That's all the credit he's going to get.
And he seems like a nice nerd.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't seen him, like, be mean or anything.
Yeah, he hasn't yelled at Mariam yet, which makes him better than most of the men in her life.
But I worry he's, like, the kind of guy that, like, you reject him and he gets violent or something like that.
Mm. Yeah, we don't know enough yet.
Yeah, we don't know. Well, then we are going to move on into our favorite and final section, which is What the Fuck, Sultan of Success, and Fatma's Hit List. So, what the fucks?
Oh, God.
I guess I'll start with Mariam and Yasin having, like, not even an inkling of the, like, where I'm blanking
meanwhile,
on her name.
Meanwhile, the audience is like, well, duh, she's at the village.
Yeah, the place she said she wanted to go and then had a meltdown when she was going there.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. And also, I mean, I still think it's pretty what the fuck of her to go to Petty's office when she's supposed to be at the police station.
Yes.
Like, that is a big what the fuck. Like,
she was going to from hospital to hospital, allegedly making sure that Ruya hadn't been checked in somewhere for, like, I guess self-harm, but she just went straight to the hospital where she has her appointment.
Yeah, and the other one that I thought was a bit what the fuck, and it just blanked my mind. Crap. That her friend or alleged friend lied to her about her rapist being dead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not a thing to lie about. What the fuck?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember all that happened there, but that's, like, a community-wide collusion situation, it feels like.
With what purpose?
I don't know, just, like, get rid of the quote-unquote damaged goods. Like, just to, like, just, they don't want her to come back, so they, you know, tell her that he's dead, it's over, and I mean, they succeeded in, like, exiling her, basically, so...
But what if she wants revenge?
I mean, all she wants to do now is, like, spit on his grave, basically, because she thinks he's dead, but... It's not gonna, yeah.
I mean, it's not gonna heal her depression, sadly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she's like has no mechanism for that at this point. No options have been given to her.
I would like for her to end up murdering him, Fatma style. Hopefully that would make her feel better.
Yeah.
Oh, I have what the fuck to Perry's cardigan. It's like,
oh yeah.
It's so, the V is so deep, it makes her look like really saggy and terrible. And it's just like, I think that's a men's cardigan, maybe, is why the V is so crazy bad for her, but it's not a good look. And I don't think somebody as put together as her would wear that.
We don't get enough wardrobe WTFs. We should do more of those. I like that.
Oh, and then I also just wrote down that Yasin's obsession with the Hoja is fucking weird.
Weird, yeah. It's like, it's not that amazing that he came to be like, is everything okay? Because he's like the mayor of that little neighborhood. Like,
yeah, like I'm not blaming him at all, but like he is not, that we've seen, been all that helpful or supportive to Yasin and his family. So the level of obsession doesn't make sense for me at all. Okay, Sultan of Success. Harunisa's girlfriend.
She did kick his ass. That was pretty funny. She's like a psychopath, but she did kick his ass.
Yeah, like if you think about it, like rationally, it would be insane to do that.
Yeah, he's so tall.
In the
he's
context
like a large
of the
man.
Show.
Yeah. Also, I'm sure he didn't hit back. Like he might have like tried to shield himself, but I very much doubt that he would have.
Well,
know,
he's
with his,
the one
like...
that confronted her. No, wasn't he like shaking her?
Did he shake her? I don't remember.
I don't remember. I feel like he was like.
Yeah, he might have.
But maybe not.
I feel my memory of it is like he approached her, be like, "What are you doing here? What's going on?" And then like the cut to like him being bruised and battered.
Yeah.
Very funny.
It was very funny.
I think Ruhie deserves some kind of props for like making it, sneaking out and making it very far on her own.
That's
with like
true.
What money? I'm not even sure like how she paid for her fare.
This is true. She's actually having conversations with people, and her son is still alive and with her. So that's, I guess, progress.
Yeah.
In terms of Fatma's hit list, can we say Gubin?
Gubin was not great this week. Yeah. If we felt bad for our perpetual hit list resident Sinan because of her, then she certainly.
Yeah.
Merits a nomination.
Yeah.
I think Petty fared pretty badly as well with her dumb condescension, which is a typical trait of her on this show at this point.
Yeah. If Gudbin hadn't been so outrageous, Petty easily would have been.
Yeah.
Would have shown the worst kind of being a human performance. But wow, Gudbin was just really hitting all the wrong notes.
Gubin took away Petty's chance to win the hit list.
I mean, I'm sure Petty will have many more opportunities. I can see a redemption arc perhaps for Gubin, but Petty, I'm like, oh, girl, I know you're gonna dig yourself out of the hole you've created.
Yeah.
All right, well, congratulations to Ruhie and Hairunisa's girlfriend, who we still don't know the name of. And watch out to Gubin. You really need to check your behavior, girl, because I do not want to be feeling bad for Sinan. It's not a place I want to be in, and it's all your fault. So thank you all so much for listening, and next time we'll be talking about episode 7.